Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Harris, your host. I invite fascinating humans from all walks of life to share their wisdom and unpack their mindsets and formulas for growth.
Hello and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Today I am interviewing Maddie Bergen, but I always do this. Bergen, yes. Maddie Bergen, not Maddie Bergen, which is a different person, I guess. Good start. I don't know why I didn't ask these things before I do. I always make this mistake. So I am.
It's okay. No one can pronounce it.
Yeah? Oh, that's great. That's good to know. I get to fit in with everybody else in the world. So Maddie Bergen on the podcast. She is in her final year of university studying civil engineering and has also run a business, well, started her own startup. She's been a VC analyst, or still is a VC analyst, and is starting a DAO for investing and giving funding to female entrepreneurs and is trying to change the landscape of startup and get more women building businesses because they are statistically much better at doing it and are just awesome at everything. And so you're doing lots of stuff and it's amazing. And I'm really excited to have you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
It's okay. I may come across a bit weirdly. I didn't sleep that much in the last few days, which let's just go that I was really excited to talk to you and it was nothing to do with other poor life choices.
Don't worry, I've been up really early and really late last night, so I'm probably the same.
Oh, cool. So we might be slightly odd the entire time, but it's going to be great. I would like to have a bit of a framing of who you are by asking you, what were the kind of things that defined you as a child? Like, what were the mindsets that you feel like were always a part of you?
Yeah, well, I think for me, hard work was always kind of ingrained into me by my dad. That could have been a bad thing in a way because I almost always felt like I had to get approval, so I always worked really hard. But at the same time, I think I'm really grateful for that aspect because I have had that experience of understanding what hard work is and really pushing yourself to achieve these goals. And I think I've kind of taken that through my life so far, and I've really almost seen the positive aspect of that. I mean, I guess I kind of grew up half in Greece, half in the UK, and I absolutely love Greek culture and very like having a big family, everyone always talking and everyone always joking. And then I'm actually half German, which is very controversial. Like, there's a big contrast between the two because my German side, like my mum is very serious. I love her to bits, but very serious and likes to do things a certain way, whereas my Greek side is the complete opposite. And I like to think I've developed traits from both where I do take my work very seriously, but hopefully my social life, you know, a little bit fun. I like to think so, but...
Nice. As in, I do believe life is all about balance and it's generally extreme in either direction. It's like too much. So hopefully you've picked all the best parts of both those cultures and not the worst parts. Yeah. Otherwise, it's just a potato. But anyway, so you enjoy a bit of social then and just getting stuff done in structure. And you have already started the business. Can you tell me a bit more about like what drove you to start that business and sort of how that went, like what the issues were, what you learned?
Yeah, of course. So I started my first business when I was 18 and it was a personal training business. I have always loved working out and I've always had this incredible passion for it. And everyone was taking a gap year and I was like, well, what do I do? And I didn't know if I wanted to go to university or what I wanted to study. And I just knew I had this passion for working out. So I was like, let's do it. Let's start personal training and got my qualification, started my business. But I actually found it quite hard at the start because no one my age was doing anything like that. No one was starting a business. And I had no education about how to start a business. I literally spent all my time listening to podcasts, reading books, trying to really understand this whole new world because it was so foreign to me and understanding, okay, how do I speak to people? How do I pick up these clients? And I actually really struggled at the start because it's working in a client-based industry is hard because people always tell you yes and they almost mess you around a little bit and you have to have this almost determination to keep going and this resilience because you will get turned down a lot and people will mess you around. But I also have to say there are so many incredible people that I've worked with and from that experience I learned so much about marketing, building my own business, structuring my time, speaking with people, all these kind of different aspects that I'm so grateful for. And I managed to build up to a relatively successful level. And I think it really gave me an understanding of what is possible when you kind of step outside the normal, because all my friends are at uni, like no one was doing their own thing. And it made me see the opportunities possible, especially with doing online personal training. Like, you can literally be anywhere in the world, like wherever you want, and still work. And I found that like a really incredible idea. And yeah, I think that experience really taught me a lot, and I've taken it kind of forward, which is why I'm continuing to do all these things. And yeah, just stepping outside the box, I guess.
Nice. Yeah, it's really cool. I've always felt a need to be slightly rebellious to whatever everyone's already doing. I don't see much adventure or interest in following things, because it's like, well, it's already being done. It's not like useful for anyone. I definitely feel like if I'd lived sort of 500-600 years ago, I'd have been on boats trying to chart different parts of the world or something kind of thing.
Yeah. No, I think it's always the people, though, that like step outside the box or like try something different that, I guess, become different in a way. Mm. And especially with all these incredible entrepreneurs that I'm talking to at the moment, I've realized it's a real common denominator. I mean, I guess you speak to entrepreneurs all the time, so I'd love to hear your kind of take on this as well.
Yeah, I think it's comes from like a genuine passion for curiosity and maybe also boredom, from as in there's just nothing excites you, and like you just would get burnt out or go crazy straight away doing stuff that everyone else is already doing. Like, there's just an innate need to do something unique, and it doesn't feel like I'm offering any value to the world if I'm doing a job where someone else could do their job the same, or if I'm like learning something that people already know. It's not pushing any kind of boundary, and like, which is, you know, growth mindset, it's about pushing all your boundaries, which is why I tend to have a lot of entrepreneurs on the show, because they love finding a boundary that someone hasn't pushed and pushing it.
Yeah,
so that's what I'd go with. Out of interest, so how did you go about marketing? Because you mentioned you learned a lot of things about marketing online and building an online business, which lots of people are struggling or really interested in doing. And I think a lot of people listening to the show like the idea of doing like a remote job on their own schedule or business. And I'm out in Spain at the moment, surrounded by people that are like quitting their jobs so they can start like doing remote things, and they've got no idea how to start. And so I just wonder if you've got any tips.
Yeah, of course. So I think my biggest tip is be authentic to yourself, especially with online personal training, is I really showed my personality through my social media. So I posted a lot of videos, spoke to all these incredible people. And I think when you're genuine about problems that you have faced in the past and like insecurities that you have faced, people can really relate to you. And when you show people that vulnerability, it creates trust. And for example, for someone to invest in my services, they need to be able to trust me. And like literally just showcasing your personality and getting it out there as much as possible, because there will be someone that connects with you. Like, not everyone is going to like you, and that is just like a fact. Like, loads of people won't like me, and that's fine. But those people that really resonated with me and connected with me, those are the type of people that I want to work with anyway. So yeah, I almost found the more open I was on my social media, the more people came to me. And then that's kind of how I established my business. And yeah, I mean, with marketing, like graphics, Canva is amazing. Social media. I also did some in-person marketing, like leaflets and things like that, which are often forgotten about. But I found that worked actually quite well. And word of mouth is the biggest thing. Making testimonials, video testimonials of all my clients were so powerful. And yeah, I think that's probably my biggest tips from like my kind of experience with a client-based industry.
Cool. That was useful. A bit of a tangent to what I think the main discussion is for the episode, but which is nice to hear. And yeah, I certainly agree with them. Just leaning into your own uniqueness and showcasing that, because if you kind of round off all your edges and make yourself kind of like generic and beige, like you're not going to stand out at all. So if you haven't got any clients, you're not going to get any new clients. Yeah. Whereas if you sort of are different, the people that are attracted to those differences, you're going to be better than anyone else out there for them, and you actually get more clients.
Yeah.
And then you can start getting referrals and all that other stuff. So good. Fully agreed. And then you also were a VC analyst. So what made you go into investing?
So to be honest with you, I kind of fell into it. Like what I've always done or tried to do is follow like my passions or what in that current moment in time I found interesting. So I did a few internships with startups, and I realized I loved that ecosystem. It's very exciting. There's no like guided rules, like you're not constrained to do. I think sometimes if you work in a big company, you're quite constrained with what you can do. But in a startup, everything's very dynamic. And I really enjoyed people I was working with. And yeah, I mean, I applied to this VC role and I was like, may as well just apply, why not? And I actually got it. And it's honestly one of the best experiences of my life because you see the innovation happening like firsthand. And I think it's so exciting, especially in the UK. There are so many exciting things happening with technology. And I can't say I can understand the technology like through and through. Like it's beyond me sometimes. But I think it's so inspiring when you are speaking to all these founders and all these incredible technology and the potential that is happening. And I also think VCs often try and catch trends before they exist in society. And I also really like that aspect because you always have to try and think ahead. So like at the moment, or like for my VC, we're looking to push like Web3 deals, metaverse, and all these exciting things. And it really opened me up to like a whole new world that I always didn't know really existed. And yeah, I think there's so much potential within it, and it's all very exciting.
Yeah, definitely. I found that you get into startups, you want to change things, and then you realize that sort of a lot of the leverage in changing things is also in the VC side of things. And also it's slightly less stressful running a VC perhaps, once you kind of get yourself on the table and just like spend. You get a lot of variety because you get to look at different things, and you don't have to sort of go through the daily toil for like 5 years, 7 years on working on just one thing, and to deal with so many rejections. But also it's kind of sad because you have to make lots of meet lots of cool people and you have to reject so many of yourself, which is like painful.
The rejections are really the worst part because there are honestly sometimes some incredible businesses, but maybe like the market isn't there or all these different aspects. And when you write that feedback email, a little bit of me is like, I'm so sorry, but I think you have to kind of also develop thick skin in a way to be a founder, and you have to kind of sometimes take feedback on board.
Definitely. Because I certainly had a lot of my friends like pivoting their business and stuff after lots of feedback, and it is really useful. But
have you ever had to kind of pivot a business idea? Or what was your experience with that?
It's been okay. It can be hard. Often depends on the co-founders as well a lot, and your dynamic and ability to sort of have those difficult discussions internally, and like general trust between each other, I think it's probably the biggest difficulty. My first business, which I started for some of the reasons to US when I was at uni and didn't really feel like doing what everyone else was doing and or do other stuff, and I also really liked working out. So I started a cycling business, which I kind of started with a few different things. There was a really cool company in Hereford that was doing like, you know, the cycle taxis that you can get in places. Yeah. So I kind of started doing that around Bristol, but also doing a bit of delivery stuff. And I thought there was going to be more of the cycle taxi stuff, which I kind of focused on first. And I was trying to like build an app kind of like Uber, but this is before Uber, for to order like a greener transport around things. I wanted to like be transporting sort of cool people around town and stuff without cars. And that mostly failed, but the delivery side of stuff was working. So I had to completely pivot and become a purely logistics delivery focused business, which at the time we didn't have co-founders, so that wasn't so difficult, apart from just realizing I'd invested in completely the wrong things and hadn't really analyzed the market at all. And then with my current business, Reason FM, for example, we started with a social podcast player that was all about like connecting people and getting them to sort of be able to talk about podcasts. And also when you're like logged in, you could see who else was listening live and like click and listen with them at the same time, but on different sides of the planet, and just sort of be connected. And it was lovely and super cool, and no one used it. And I mean, I still enjoy using it. And to be fair, actually, we're getting to like 200 daily active users now, which is great. But like, there have been some other social things, and it's not like a big enough difference compared to other podcast players. So if you've got like Spotify or Apple, it's just you've already got everything there, and it's kind of cool to go and use it. But then most of your friends won't be on our app when you first get it, and all of your podcast subscriptions are on the other one, and you kind of just have the habit. So it's not enough to suddenly switch your habit. And we've definitely pivoted to focus on the podcast host. So I guess you describe what we built was more of like a vitamin versus a painkiller, as in it was a nice to have versus like a, oh my God, I'm really stressed out about the fact that I don't get to talk to my friends when I do a podcast. Whereas for the podcasters, they are really stressed out about the fact that they are wasting like 20 hours a week trying to get one episode out, they're spending a lot of money. These are actual pains. These are like, I will instantly switch my podcasting hosting service provider to something that like gets rid of these pains. And so we're building a podcasting ecosystem that allows you to sort of create and record stuff, distribute it, have your notes sorted out, guests, and just making everything like really quick and easy and cheaper and all in one place. And life is great. And that's solving actual pains and involved a pivot that we actually had to let go one of our co-founders and sort of have some difficult conversations around going through these things, and talking with investors and all this stuff. And so it was kind of painful, but definitely better for it. And also going into Web3 things as well, because of my current co-founder has been very against it. We just had a lot of different conversations, but we do want to actually start having like NFTs of each of your episodes. Because certainly if you think of all the bigger podcasters, like sure, the long tail of 99% of podcasters that don't have that many listeners, like they're not going to, no one's really going to buy their NFTs. But anyone that runs a kind of big podcast could actually make quite a lot of money through having sort of Web3 stuff involved in that and helping them to run communities and build cool things around their podcast. And there is a really big opportunity that no one's really gone into in podcasting. So that's something that's taken a while to get to, but we are now sort of going to start putting that in as well.
No, I really, I like the idea of like transitioning as well, including more Web3 stuff, because I think the whole thing with Web3 is like the reason a lot of people are so scared about it is just the fact that it sounds very scary, but when you break it down, it's actually, I mean, I personally find it really exciting and it's an opportunity, but we need to educate everyone around what it actually is and the opportunities it creates and why we should be excited about it and not scared. And I think that starts with just having a small conversation. And like I presented at an event the other day and about my NFT collection, and the amount of questions I got, like, what is an NFT? Why would I buy this? Like all these different questions. And I think those, like answering them is so important to just educate, because I think it's almost a bit of like an exponential curve, because then they'll go home and talk to their families about it. And I think creating the conversations is really important.
Definitely. And this perfectly transitions us into my next question around what are you doing at the moment with your current project, which happens to be very Web3 focused?
Yeah, of course. So from all my past experiences, I guess I've really wanted to do something about female entrepreneurship and especially the funding gap. So currently only 2.3% of VC funding goes to women, which is absolutely crazy and it blows my mind. And there are a lot of underlying dynamics as to why this is the case, but I've wanted to do something about it for a while. And I kind of jumped into Web3, NFTs, and really saw the value in them and the communities you can build, and really kind of saw what is possible. And that got me very, very excited. I was meeting all these incredible women as well as men, and I almost saw this opportunity to create this project that builds a community for these entrepreneurs. And what we'll be doing is we'll also be funding female founders. So we'll be giving grants to female founders. And I mean, it will function as a DAO. And a DAO is a decentralized autonomous organization. And most people don't understand what this is, so I can really quickly go over it.
Yes, please.
So a DAO is pretty much, so when you think about the structure of a normal company, you have the CEO at the top and then you have employees kind of underneath, and the CEO makes all the decisions, tells everyone what to do. But with a DAO, it gives power back to those employees. So the company could be run by the employees rather than the CEO at the top. Now, there can be like a group of people that filter out all the voices or like calm everyone down, because if you have 100 voices speaking at once, no one's going to be heard. And so the way that this would relate to my NFT collection, Angel Alliance, is so female founders pitch their startups to our DAO, and then the DAO can vote for which startups we fund. But then, like I was mentioning, there will be a group that will be filtering the initial applications, which are called our this group. And that's just to make sure that we provide the best ones to our community. And essentially, like if I had to wrap it up, I know it's a very complicated topic and I recommend everyone looking into it, but it's giving power back to the community. So instead of me deciding what startups we give grants to, the community will decide. So we've been called the female entrepreneur Shark Tank or Dragon's Den in the UK a few times. And yeah, and as well as this, I mean, with Angel Alliance, we're really looking to build as much purpose around the project. So networking events, educational events, like I'm really, really big on pushing those things because I understand their value. And I think, especially with connecting people, I think there's such power with just even this conversation we're having, like you learn the most from talking with others. And I want to build this community and atmosphere that creates that. And I guess within the community, we're looking for both men and women because you need that diversity, but we will be funding female founders to really try and help stop this gap in a way. I know that like Angel Alliance can't solve every problem, but I want it to be a place that educates women about applying for funding and how much to apply for and all these kind of different factors. And yeah, I'm very excited about the project and I have big visions for it. I want it to be more than just an NFT collection, but I guess if anyone takes anything away from everything I've just said is look into NFTs. They have some real value and there are some really exciting things happening. And I know a lot of people think NFT and then they think, oh, scam, like shouldn't do that. And there are scams, but there is so much value that these JPEG images can bring. It's so much more than just an image, and really educating yourself around that is very important.
For sure. I did a season on my other podcast, The Wise and Yesterday One, on money investing and also blockchain stuff. So we had a whole episode dedicated to Bitcoin, an episode dedicated to NFTs, and then an episode purely just for Web3 and things like DAOs and stuff. So if anybody wants to hear more, they can go to the Wise and Yesterday podcast.
Yes.
And then
I'm sure you explained it a lot better than I did.
No, it was pretty good. But you'd only have 4 minutes and it's definitely like a deep topic.
Yeah.
So why do you think you're going to be able to make a difference to the landscape of investing and female founding companies, founded companies?
Yeah. So I've spoken to a lot of these female founders and I have found often the biggest problem is a lack of awareness around how to apply for funding, how much to apply for, when to apply. Like women at every stage of like having an idea to creating the startup to scaling it are less likely to continue than a man. And a lot of that comes from a lack of education or a lack of awareness about how to scale a business and how do you create profits, all these different things. And I think by educating people, I think that will make a big difference. And building this community that almost makes you feel welcome and feel like it's okay to, you know, struggle in all these different aspects. And I mean, we've already seen it grow and it's very, very exciting. But I think also the fact that it's in Web3 is like a lot of people see that as, why would you want to do it in Web3? Like that doesn't make sense. But I see it as an opportunity. There is a transition occurring, a shift occurring, and I want to be ahead of that. And I want this to be a community that in the future could hopefully be somewhere that people think, female entrepreneur, where's a good group? I hope they think, okay, Angel Alliance, let me join there. And yeah, I just think all around educating these women and really getting them collaborating together.
True. Yeah, I think that's like a super useful way to approach things. And I think there's a lot of opportunities to sort of change stuff and like make things move faster using Web3. And I think Web3 is genuinely all about like building communities first and then going into like features of like products or sort of solutions and things, whereas like Web2 is more about like kind of starting with a product and trying to build a community around it. It's like, okay, who are the people that have the problems I want to solve for, get them all together in Web3, and then like you sort of build naturally the right things to solve their problems around it. Which
would you ever launch your own NFT collection?
Yes. So I also, a handy plug, I am also co-founding a company called Auto Minter, which lets you easily create NFT collections in 5 minutes without doing any coding, which is great. Obviously, it might take slightly longer than that to just work out what like assets and things you want in terms of the image side of it. But otherwise, the actual like logistics of making however many different things you want, setting things together, and then getting onto a blockchain and sending it to your community is really fast. And so, yeah, I'm going to launch some easy ones, like just for the growth mindset in my other podcasts, just for fun and to get into doing that. But then I would like to think about some kind of community style DAOs and things. Like, whilst I've been out here, I've been kind of thinking about maybe like buying a villa somewhere and like turning it into like a startup hacker founder retreat for creative entrepreneurial people.
I love it.
That maybe you could have some kind of like investing things going on. And yeah, basically all the kind of people that I like spending time with, sort of a place that's sort of like dedicated for those kinds of people to kind of get out from their normal routine and sort of challenge some of their views and opinions and like help reshape them into better people. And it's going to be awesome. So maybe there's something I can do there.
I'm very excited.
Yeah. So, I don't know, rumination's going on. Something's going to happen at some point, for sure. Mm-hmm. Thanks for asking. Okay. Then, in general, what do you think in the investing landscape needs to change as a mindset?
I think it's a hard question to answer. So there has been a lot of research done as to why women do get less funding. And an aspect of it is that there are so many male VC like analysts and everything like that. I think in the US, I think it's something like 95% of VC analysts are male.
Wow.
And there are four different stages into investing in the business. So there's the first stage, which is sourcing the startup. Second stage, which is interviewing and kind of getting to grips with what we're doing. And then the third stage is due diligence. And then fourth is the actual investment. In the first two stages is where there are kind of underlying gender biases. For example, often a male VC will have other men within their network, and then that's why they'll source their startups. So that's kind of one aspect of it. But then the second aspect of it is that studies have been done. So there's two that I can kind of bring up. But one was where a man and a woman did the exact same pitch and the man was chosen. I think it's hard because it's almost like human nature, like men are perceived as more powerful and all these different things. Like we're wired that way as humans. So it's a hard thing to kind of break through. And as well, there was another study done where they were kind of observing these interviews that VC analysts were doing, and women were often asked questions more about risk for their business, whereas men were often asked questions around their ambitions for the business.
Mm.
I think it's going to take time. I think we need to get more women into VC. That's like one of the kind of things that I think needs to change. But I think the second thing is educating women on how to get more VCs in their network, how to answer these questions. So you have to turn like a risk question almost, you have to answer it as an ambition question. And it's just about educating around those kind of dynamics. And I think it's really improving. I think it is. And there are so many amazing women-only VCs out there and very, very exciting. But I think it's just raising awareness of these underlying kind of biases. And again, like it is, half of them are human nature. And like I've met so many incredible men in the industry that are really trying to invest in more women. They recognize a problem. And I think we just need more of that.
Yeah, for sure. I think statistically, women do also start more of like the consumer-focused yeah. businesses, which are harder to get funding for compared to B2B,
yeah,
which is just more like ways to sort of print money that like investors like. But otherwise, yeah, when you sort of like when people ask risk-style questions versus like what's the sort of potential yeah. questions, it's called like prevention mindset versus promotion yes. mindset, which I've done an episode on the podcast with a guy mm-hmm. called Ryan Gottfriedson, who's like a leadership coach and psychologist thing, and super good. It's really interesting how silly we are yeah. as humans, and just in other ways where we sort of
mm-hmm.
just limit our potential for things by like looking at all the risks and stuff, mm-hmm. and then we're just much more likely to succeed when we kind of focus on what yeah. the potential
no,
is.
I agree. But and I think with this whole kind of issue, like women almost need to like own it in a sense, like, okay, there is this huge gap, but let's push past that, you know, and let's not let that hold us back. Like, let's keep pushing and motivating, you know, like I don't know, like I want people to really go for it.
Definitely, because it's the prevention versus promotion mindset in VC, yeah. but it's also the prevention promotion mindset in women thinking about starting a business who are like, oh, I don't want to have like a terrible yeah. life where I don't get successful or anything about like starting a business that's going to yeah. go wrong. But you want to be like, nah, you're going to nail it.
yeah.
We're going to give yeah. you the right tools. We're going to help you stay get started, which yeah. is obviously what you're all about. So,
yeah. I mean, I guess it's like, obviously it's a lot easier said than done. And it's easy for me to sit here, okay, like just go and do it. But if you really, really want to, at least try, you know? Like, what's the harm in
exactly. It only leads to good things.
Yeah.
Might not be exactly what you expected, but
yeah.
no idea what it... Like, most things that you aim for end up being something completely different, but as long as you aim for something, something good happens. And I recently wrote, like, I've got a newsletter each week where I kind of write something about, like, creativity in life. And I was playing a game of pool. I'm not amazing at pool, like anyone that doesn't play that much. And often you'll have these shots that, like, straight, and you just miss them anyway. And then like I have other ones where you can't even see anything that you pop, but you just kind of aim at something, hit it hard, and then like a ball go in like a different pocket somewhere else, and you're like, wow. Yeah. You just have like a bit of an analogy for life, as in like actually, as long as you take a shot, something can happen and you can really surprise yourself with like the potential of things, as long as you sort of put a bit of force behind it.
Yeah. And I guess it's almost like the butterfly effect, where like, for example, your business may not work out.
Yeah, but you'll meet people, you'll learn stuff.
Greater, you know?
Definitely. For sure. So anyone starting, thinking about starting a business, go for it. Yeah. Especially if you're a woman, if you're a guy, see if you can get some women co-founders on board.
Yeah. And then join Angel Alliance when you need some help.
Yeah, definitely. So how do you people join Angel Alliance exactly?
Yeah, of course. So it is an NFT collection. So you do have to kind of educate yourself around buying an NFT. So we will be launching on the 12th of March, which is very, very exciting, very soon. And you essentially buy an NFT, and then you get to be part of our community and part of the DAO, which vote on the startups that we fund.
Nice. Cool. Well, that's super exciting. And I'm looking forward to joining the group myself.
Looking forward to having you.
Cheers. And having lots of cool female-founded startups applying. That's going to be awesome. Okay, a few other questions that I just like asking people is, what is one of your earliest ever memories that is quite distinct?
I would probably say like just being in Greece. And I was always quite active as a kid. I absolutely loved it. I would have spent most of my childhood like on the beach whenever I could be. And I think some of my most distinct memories are in that kind of place. So that's why I always find it so amazing when I go back, because it almost feels like going home in a way.
Cool. Yeah, there is something about just like a few senses of home that you have in your brain. And stuff that sort of digs into like your deeper memories is really, I don't know, heartwarming and stuff. So that's cool. Nice to hear. And what's one of the kindest things that someone has done for you recently?
Can I say like my co-founder's helping me with his business, and even just the community we're building with Angel Alliance, the amount of kind comments I get, like about, I love this community, or I'm so happy you're doing something about this issue. And like, I literally cannot explain to you how happy that makes me feel, that something I am doing and all my incredible co-founders and everyone in my team, we're actually making a difference in people's lives. And that honestly blows my mind. And I think that at the moment, I'm still getting used to that feeling, and I don't think I ever will get used to it. But that's probably a combination of the most kindest things that have been happening to me recently.
Cool. That's good. I mean, I hope it keeps happening, but I also hope that you don't get like super complacent and totally used to people being epically kind all the time.
Yeah. I won't get too big.
Nice one. Cool. Well, wishing you all the best of luck, and just really excited by the fact that you're trying to change things. I would love to have dug into like how you're doing so many things all at once, but the podcast would get too long, and maybe another time. But cool.
Yeah, I mean, thank you so much for having me. It's been a great conversation. I've really enjoyed it.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Growth Mindset Podcast. Before you head on to another episode, what's your biggest aha moment from today's discussion? You can share with us your insights and join us on Reason FM. Reason FM is a social podcasting app and the best way to discover new podcasts, connect with hosts and other listeners. Also, don't forget to tune into the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast with me and my co-host Nico, and we expose you to a different perspective and dive into the world's most thought-provoking and inspiring books. That's all for this episode, and with that, keep learning and keep growing.